Just want to remind you again that this business of binding and loosing, which was given to Peter a couple chapters earlier, is given to the whole community here. So again, it casts light on the whole nature of authority in the Jesus community. The readings today make an interesting ensemble. I'd like to introduce them with a little anecdote. A couple years ago, my neighbor at that time, a widow who was living by herself and was very sensitive to light, sunlight, and heat, let her grass grow about 8 inches high in her front lawn. Okay, and then she came home one day and the grass was mowed and there was a bill in her mailbox from the city. Someone in the neighborhood had complained to the city about this social sin, namely an unkempt lawn, an appeal to power, and they did their job, and the upshot of that, of course, was a breakdown of what fragile community we have in that neighborhood. So all the elements of that little story are implicit, I think, in this business of all three readings, Ezekiel, Paul, and Matthew. First of all, every sin, Paul makes clear, is a sin against love. Every sin is in some way a sin against love, period, full stop. And the great enemy of love, of course, is fear, which expresses itself in cowardice. And the breaching of love is a breakdown of community, of course, and the central element of community is trust. You can't love if you don't trust. And I think that's what Jesus is about in all this stuff, when he's talking about if you have problems. You have to trust your brother or sister to go to them. If they sin against you or me, you have to trust them. In other words, You address them in trust. You don't circumvent them by calling in the boss, you know. You don't tell the cops or the pope or the bishop. You go and talk to them. But we don't do that. I mean, we learn as little kids, you know. I vividly remember my sisters and I telling her, wait till I tell mom. You know? And then she would say, well, wait till your father gets home. You get this gradual displacement of responsibility and the breakdown of community, of connection between people. By the invocation of some kind of alien power which will come in and even further destroy trust and community and make love impossible. This is what's going on, and this is why this is so important. You talk to each other. This face-to-face relationship, which is, as the sociologists talk about, is a primary relationship, has to be a relationship of trust. Otherwise, you won't go to them. I mean, they didn't trust my friend Maureen. And of course, after that, Maureen didn't trust anybody in the neighborhood because it was all done anonymously. So this thing sort of metastasizes. It goes all over the place and pollutes the whole environment. And that's what Jesus is interested in. Because love is impossible in that environment. Because trust has been breached, power has been used as a means of violence, and the community, the possibility of community is removed. Now this nice little domestic neighborly contretemps is familiar to everybody. But we're also talking about something larger, because in the Matthean church, you may remember, it is Matthew alone among the evangelists who have this big thing of the centrality of Peter's position, yet Peter, who is a rock, becomes a stumbling block. You remember last Sunday? Peter the rock becomes a stumbling block. He somehow offends against the truth and against love, and also, Matthew has this famous passage near the end of the gospel called, "No one, Father, called No One Teacher. And the scholars believe that Matthew added that because already in the early Christian movement, those people who saw themselves as authoritative or bosses in some way were already throwing their weight around. In other words, the presupposition for this whole business is a radically democratic, to use a modern word, environment. We're all equal. Nobody has more power than anybody else. And it's fascinating. I strongly recommend that you read chapter 16 to the end of chapter 18, where this passage comes from in the Gospel of Matthew today, if you get a chance. It's very illuminating. Because the thing that occurs right before this is this business of the scandal of children. If one of these little ones is hurt, it's better than the millstone be put around their neck and they be drowned, you know? Matthew obviously didn't have the pedophile crisis in mind. But that's a great illumination of how dysfunctional we are as a church. The bishops get wind somehow of this happening, and what do? They go to the law court. They invoke lawyers. And how many little kids are told by their parents that they're crazy? Or how many priests, like Father Sylvester, says, if you tell anybody, your parents will get killed. In every one of those instances, what's going on? An abuse of power. Power as a form of oppression and violence. How many people, and I thought of this myself with to my shame, when I was in Mississippi, I remember Nancy C. sent me this newspaper article where the Diocese of London had countersued the Swales family for $1.3 million before Father Glendenning had abused their three sons in St. Peter's Seminary. I did not write to Bishop Sherlock and say, how dare you do that? How dare you do that? Why, because he's the bishop, of course. Rubbish. Rubbish. I mean, everybody's supposed to be able to talk to everybody. If we are all, in fact, as God, the Gospel of Matthew, and as Jesus makes very clear, if we're all really equal, then those in power have to have ears to hear and the capacity to listen and the capacity to receive what is said. We don't do this as an institution. We truly do not do this as an institution. So we're not just talking about me and Maureen, my neighbor in the neighborhood on Gablewood. We're talking about the whole rugged church. You know, we're talking about the institution as such. We don't work right. And what's at stake, of course, is what's always at stake. Paul puts it in his wonderfully clear-sighted, apodictic fashion. Owe no one anything except to love one another. There you are. The fulfillment of the law. If everything is not judgeable in that and subsumed under that rubric, we're wrong-footing it continuously. So we're called, again, as we always are by the Gospel, to be larger than ourselves, to overcome our fear, to overcome our cowardice, our distrust, to open our hearts to each other and to God.